but Utnapishtim's compassionate wife intervenes once again. So, as a parting gift, Utnapishtim reveals a second secret of the gods. He tells Gilgamesh where, in the waters of the great deep, the freshwater sea under the earth, he can find a magical plant that will restore him to youth. However young his name implies he is, Gilgamesh feels old and weary now, and in desperate need of renewal. He plunges into the great deep, finds the plant, and brings it to the surface. Finally, it seems, he has found something that will put his heart at ease. But in this poem, there is always a but. Gilgamesh's speech to Ur-Shanabi the boatman on the shore of the great deep is a wonderfully complex little passage. First, he calls the marvelous plant the antidote to the fear of death. And our questions begin. If eating the plant is not equivalent to passing the sleep test, but is a consolation prize instead, if it doesn't make you immortal like the fruit of the tree of life in the Garden of Eden, does it at least restore you to a protected youth in which you can't get fatally sick or injured, after which you again age and then die? Or is your youth just as vulnerable as an ordinary young person's? And when you grow old, can you take another bite and grow young a second time, a hundredth time, until the supply gives out? None of this is made clear. None of it has to be. Any of it is possible. What is clear is that for someone who eats the plant, death has been temporarily avoided, and the fear of death has been postponed. The plant is a medicine that addresses the symptoms of the fear of death, not its cause. It is a palliative, not a cure. Still, Gilgamesh is elated. He tells Ur-Shanabi that rather than eating the plant immediately, he first wants to test its effects. I will take it to Uruk. I will test its power by seeing what happens when an old man eats it. If that succeeds, I will eat some myself and become a carefree young man again. This statement, too, is complex and fascinating. Like the killing of Humbaba, it is first of all story-driven rather than character-driven. Gilgamesh must kill the monster because that's what heroes do. He must not eat the plant because, as we all know, he returns home aged and exhausted. But there are several possibilities implicit in his desire to take the plant home. Perhaps he is just being prudent for the first time in his life. Perhaps he is afraid of the plant's effects, or at least cautious about them, and needs to use an old man in Uruk as a human guinea pig. On the other hand, it may not be prudence that motivates him to bring the plant home before eating it. Perhaps some transformation in his character has already begun, which makes him want to postpone the magical return to youth until he can do it in his own city, before the eyes of his own people. Perhaps there is also a desire to use the plant for the benefit of the whole community. He will go home, choose a particularly deserving old man who has nothing to lose by having the experiment fail, and if it succeeds, he will portion out tiny samples of the plant to 1,000 old men and give a sprig to the royal gardener to see if it can be cultivated in lush-gardened Uruk, so that it will be available for future generations as well. It is possible that something like these thoughts are taking shape in the shadowy recesses of Gilgamesh's mind.